All right, we got here Lance Growlick. He is the host of a top 50 podcast, Eye on Franchising, also the CEO of ION Franchising. We got introduced to Lance through Travis Huff, who has been on this podcast. Thanks so much for coming on, Lance.
My pleasure, Antonio. Landon, hope you guys are doing fantastic today.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're doing great. How did you connect with Travis? How'd you guys meet?
Well, I know Travis's partner, Kenny. Okay. So, and I was supposed to be, I'll eventually be on Travis's podcast. We're trying to connect on that. We've both been busy.
Yeah. I can imagine. So let's talk about that. What you've been busy with. I know I've read your bio. You're crushing it in the franchise world, just crushing it in the world of entrepreneurship. Tell us a little bit more about your story. You know, you're now living in this amazing glamour. Like, you have this great, business model and all these things, but obviously there's a story behind that. And there were some trials and tribulations. Tell us a little bit more about your story, about how you got to where you are today.
I like how you hit on the glamour. I was talking to my friends last night at dinner. You know, I made my wife retire last year from being a school principal.
That's amazing.
I said, honey, enough of this nonsense. You got to help me with the business here. So bottom line, so look, everybody grows up differently, and everybody, we look at each other and wonder how we each became an entrepreneur. What is that real story? Kind of like you just asked me. And is it some lab accident gone wrong? Is it some environmental thing? For me, it was growing up and, grandpa owned a whole bunch of supermarkets in Brooklyn. I grew up in New York and I got to see the business owner unfold in front of me. He created his own business from nothing, built an empire. Another grandfather was a real estate attorney playing real life Monopoly. And the third portion of the trifecta of investments, real estate, Wall Street, there it is. That's what dad did. Dad was on Wall Street. His company was in largest over-the-counter trading house on Wall Street. So bottom line for me, I had no chance of really ever being employed long-term. So I joined, worked on Wall Street with dad, ended up heading to Arizona to join an uncle who was an early tech guy that jumped out of that after making a fortune and said, hey, I heard you're bored on Wall Street. Let's build a billion-dollar restaurant empire. Restaurant empire. What? And I did restaurant stuff in college. I enjoyed the heck out of the hospitality piece, but I didn't think I'd make a career of it. So that got me started in franchises because he did TGI Fridays in the old days. And we built that TGI Fridays franchise through acquisitions and our own openings as well to about $225 million a year in a pretty short period of time. In 89, 90, 91, $2.50 a beer. Not $10 a draft beer like today.
Well, out where I live in Philly, it's like $20 a draft beer in some of these places. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the that's kind of the short version. But look, I got into franchises. I did Wingstop. I did Krispy Kreme donuts in a couple of states. I was president of the Franchise Advisory Council for Wingstop. And I realized there's a lot of people that don't know much about franchises. There seems to be this huge divide of I'm going to start my own business, some people say, and then others don't even explore franchises. It's like maybe like marriage. Some people just don't explore it. I don't know.
Sure.
I figured it out now.
Well, one of the questions I have off the bat is there's a dichotomy between some people that they want to get into entrepreneurship, but they also don't want to just like buy themselves a job. And I feel like a lot of people that first get into franchises that don't really understand the business model, all they're really doing is buying themselves a job by landing in this franchise and then just working inside of it. How are you able to differentiate that and be able to build a business plan out at scale to actually build an enterprise of these types of franchises?
It's a great question. Everybody, though, is different. There are people that we know, maybe you guys included, that just want to build empires. And I'm talking about, I want to be a billionaire. And there are other people that just want to get out of the situation they're in, have more freedom, have more income, and that's it. So I know people that get into a franchise, $110,000 investment. And yes, that's one of the biggest misconceptions out there. So you have to be a millionaire to own a franchise. That's BS. There's more franchises under $200,000 today than ever, in which, in this example, you could open a franchise for $110,000, $120,000, only put 20% down. So really leverage your money just like any other asset, like real estate. And all of a sudden, you're building yourself cash flow. The first year is always going to be the toughest, like anything, like having a baby. Got to make sure it doesn't hit its head on the sharp edges, so to speak. Same thing as you. Make sure you're safe. Build this thing up, cash flow. But besides the cash flow you're going to derive from the business, you're also going to have the ability, like in real estate, to build equity. And that's one of the things that, if you want to call it buying a job, if you have to be there day to day, there are some people that love that. Maybe they never made over $100,000 a year, and now they're going to make over $100,000 a year, working their butt off in their job. And I have a friend in mind I'm thinking of with a window-related franchise, one of the biggest brands out there. It's called Neighborly. Neighborly owns about 17 franchise brands, did almost $3.5 billion or more in revenue across all their franchises. And this gentleman, David, got in for under 120, and 7 years later, he sold for about $1.2 million.
That's great.
He worked it. Nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah. And that was one of the things I was going to ask is, you know, I think we've run into the same concept of a lot of people have limiting beliefs on the capital it takes to get into these, to get into these deals.
Yes.
What does it look like for somebody, you know, what's the timeline look like, and what's the process look like for someone who's looking to get involved in their first franchise deal from start to finish? Kind of like, what does that process truly look like when you open up the hood?
To actually get into it and get it open?
Correct. And also maybe even finding the right franchise for them, right? Because
yeah,
there's a million directions you can go in, obviously.
Yeah. And look, that's what I do. I realized when I was looking at franchises, I didn't feel I had the support. And I realized there was a thing called a franchise broker or franchise consultant, which is what I do. And the best part about what I do is I truly work for you for free. It's not like a real estate agent where when the deal closes, you pay me or I pay you. In this case, I'm truly a free resource. Don't have enough time to go through all those details. But bottom line is I'm a free resource. I have about 800 brands in every single industry. So what I do is I find out the what. What are you guys looking for? Then two biggest things in your what is, what is that investment? And what that means specifically is, how much cash do you have? And I'll figure out the financing. I have plenty of lenders. So it could be, let's say, a ROBS, a rollover business startup loan out of your 401k. It could be a stock portfolio loan. I had somebody do that recently. You can do that pretty low interest. Or the most popular being an SBA loan. SBA loans take typically 90 days. They're not easy. I mean, as long as you have a 680 credit score and you have some sort of resume of success, you can get in any type of business. You know, obviously, there's a registry, the SBA registry. So brands on the registry can get an SBA loan for that. But as far as the ramp up period, I've owned restaurants. Restaurants are the longest runway. It could take you from the time you, first of all, the discovery process that you asked, like meeting with me. I've had somebody get into a franchise in under 30 days. He was laser focused on one hour heating and air conditioning. 1 hour is a great brand. Just put in my new AC in my house. And under 30 days, he became a franchisee in San Diego. Other people, it could take 6-7 months to even decide what franchise, whether it's their spouse or family they're trying to get on board. The discovery process, normally, though, if you're in a hurry, nobody's taking your credit card after the first phone call. This is truly like a marriage. You got to get to know each other and like each other. And, you know, but you can do it in 60 days comfortably.
On the financing side, to stay on that side, I know now that interest rates have risen a little bit, well, a lot of it from what they were during COVID, seller finance is becoming a little bit more popular for people looking to buy in. And there's a lot of baby boomers that are looking to retire, and it might be attractive for them to just amortize their retirement and just, you know, seller finance these types of projects. Do you see that coming up in your world?
No.
With existing franchises?
No. We don't see it that often at all.
Okay.
Because when you have a great business, what happens with some of the best businesses, best franchises, when they're ready to retire, typically they're going to call another franchisee and say, hey, Landon, hey, Antonio, interested in buying? And these franchisees know that business model better than anybody, obviously. And it's possible they'll get some seller financing, because one of the advantages of seller financing, when you know the individual, is the tax issue, the tax ramification. Nobody wants to sell. I'm working with a family right now that has one of the highest volume Little Caesars pizza shops in the U.S. Well, I warn them, don't sell now. because they're not prepared for the exit. All that tax liability that they're going to have is going to be insane. And they asked me the number one question, how should we sell this? So that's easy. Sell to another franchisee. So the scraps, essentially, in my opinion, in the world of franchising, after other franchisees choose not to buy someone's franchise when they're trying to exit, it'll go to open market. And usually it does that when people want too much money for their franchise. Maybe they've done incredibly well, or maybe they've screwed it up and still want too much money.
Right.
And then it goes out to the public and brokers and what have you.
So what are some, you know, with obviously nobody on this podcast is an asset protection attorney, right? But what are some mistakes you see people make? Like, should you be buying these franchises under your personal name? Should you have other entities in place? Like, what do you typically see makes a ton of sense in that space?
Yeah, I mean, like always, you're definitely just going to set up an LLC typically, or an S-corp, but, you know, it's typically it's just a regular LLC. And you know, different states have different rules on asset protection. I mean, Nevada, Wyoming, Delaware, charging order protection. And like you said, nobody's an asset protection manager, or attorney, but that's, you know, those are the basics. You're always going to have an LLC, but at the end of the day, it's still you personally. Everybody right. wants a personal guarantee on you. Everybody's going to ask for that. At the end of the day, if you get into a franchise, I always use McDonald's as an example. You can't decide after 3 months with McDonald's that I could do this better and I'm going to, you know, become McDowell's and use the exact same stuff and the same recipe and the same food. You're going to get sued till the cows come home and you'll be shut down. So, you know, look, getting into a franchise, like any business relationship, you get to do your due diligence. You get to know whether you're going to love this brand or not. You have an opportunity. The way the process works, every franchise brand presents what's called a franchise disclosure document. There's 23 items. One of them is the earnings claim. You might see, like I was looking at one of my great staffing companies, $150,000 or less is the investment, including working capital and what have you. And the mature franchisees are doing $5 million plus a year, $6 million even in this particular brand. It says so in the disclosure document. But then you have an opportunity to talk to existing franchisees and confirm, hey, are you loving this? Would you do it over again? Are you making money? So franchising, there's a lot of high integrity. There's a hell of a process to deciding which brand is for you. And I'm your advocate. I get to be the voice of reason. I've talked people out of one brand and said, you know what, based on what's transpired, you should do this brand.
What are some of the most attractive brands and most profitable brands today? Because I know that there's some restrictions, like a Chick-fil-A sounds really good, but I know that there's some restrictions that you have to like work inside of it and it might not be able to, you know, build it at scale. Yeah. What are some of the most attractive things that you're seeing here?
Yeah. There's a difference between, being required to be an owner operator. I have a family friend that owns 19 Great Clips Hair Salons. When he first got approached with that idea, he thought it was the stupidest thing he ever heard because he has no hair, so he can't even be a customer, and he doesn't know how to cut hair. Well, that story is the setup for anything in franchising, because I have people that come to me all the time and I show them a roofing franchise. They go, roofing? I don't know anything about that. It's a technical, well, you don't know how to cut hair, do you? Let me tell you a story about my friend that, you know. So the bottom line is getting people out of their comfort zone, and home services brands today are incredibly hot. Home services brands, air conditioning, roofing, I mean, it runs the gamut. I mean, you know, we have foam, spray foam insulation brands, Koala insulation, iFoam. So, and all of these brands, generally speaking, Mighty Dog Roofing is a $350,000 investment, Best Choice. Plumbing brands like Zoom Drain, hot. Their major corporate territories do $10 million a year. I just got my wife's niece and her husband in an air conditioning brand, and they're under 30, and they're in outside of Austin, Texas. They're starting with one. There's a guy that exited one of these air conditioning brands for $60 million not too long ago. He amassed 15 territories, built up the cash flow. The franchise exit can be huge. You can sell for 3 to 5 times cash flow. So the question is, how high can you get your cash flow?
I'm so glad you kind of finished off with that, because I was going to ask you, like, you alluded to some of it before, but what mistakes have you seen franchisees make in that sales process? You know, obviously, like you mentioned, they're going to give a multiple off of revenue, off of EBITDA, and they're going to, you know, that multiple is obviously what determines what your payout is. And there's obviously tax implications. There's a cost basis issue a lot of folks face. Like, what are some of the things that you're seeing mistakes being made, and also success stories of people planning the proper way in that light?
Well, there's a lot of planners out there. A good buddy of mine in New York City, that's what he does. He handles exits or planned exits or proposed or expected exits of 20 million plus. And he handles a lot of those exits or franchisees. So he and I work together on the big ones. So the mistakes are not planning, obviously. And there are planners for the smaller exits. It's nice to be able to exit for 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, and maybe parlay that into something else. The biggest mistakes I think that I know that I see people make on a regular basis is in the selection process of the franchise. It's like a marriage. There's a lot of lust. There's a lot of emotional and a lot of excitement in the early stages, in the dating stage. The question always becomes, who the heck is going to run this business? And as I mentioned earlier, So Great Clips, for example, Chick-fil-A, you have to be a full-time owner operator. Nobody checks your time card, but they want an owner there. Fast Signs is another one of those. I have a ton of what we call semi-absentee businesses, semi-absentee ownership, which means you keep your day job, you keep your other businesses intact, whatever the heck you're doing, you probably spend 10, 20 hours a week on the business, not in the business. And you hire a manager, and that's permissible. And that is a huge growing piece of franchising today. Many of your listeners, viewers, have a business. And if they don't, they want a business. So this could be that opportunity. And look, it's about building that bridge where you are comfortable. There are some people that have a higher risk tolerance than others. And whether your bridge is a rope ladder or a Tarzan swing from your day job to your new business, or you want to build that steel bridge and take your time and make sure you have a rock solid transition from being a W-2 employee to being a business owner, you can do either. The choice is really yours. And today, more than ever, people are becoming multi-brand franchisees. They might have one sandwich shop. Now they diversify into hair salons. Then they diversify further into a home service brand. Or some people stay in one lane in home services and say, well, I might as well, I'm already in plumbing. I might as well start air conditioning, or I might as well get into roofing because I already have these customers. Can sell them something else down the road, right?
Sure. So let's flip to the other side of the coin, because we have some people on our podcast that, and in our network, that run businesses that might want to build out a franchise model over time. What do those steps look like high level to make sure that you're in a position to actually start franchising to other franchisees?
Yeah, the top few things that I look for when I talk to people about setting up a franchise system is, number one, the person I'm looking right at, like looking at you guys. Are they somebody that can convince somebody that they're going to support other people and build out a team to support them down the road? And really, with that, equally as important is, do they have a model that is appropriate to grow and scale throughout the U.S.? Because really, that's all it is. It's like when Dan Rowe with FranSmart, who's a guy I know, identified that Five Guys with one location in Virginia is worthy of scale. And it's just family, you know, five guys, family members, dad and sons, took it to like 500 locations from one. That's how it all starts. But you have to have a model, and you have to have a team that is willing to work.
So we built out the franchise. We've had a bunch of franchisees. Now, let's say that I bought a franchise. What are the easiest ways to start? Like, if we're looking to exit down the road and that's our long-term vision, what's the easiest ways to achieve more profitability and raise that EBITDA so we get a higher multiple over time?
Yeah, I mean, it's literally all about focusing on the business. I mean, this podcast is all about consistency. Well, guess what? That's what franchising is all about. It's consistency. People go to McDonald's because whether you're in Kansas or China, you should be able to go to McDonald's and the quarter pounder you know, with cheese should taste right about the same. Hard work, though, and focus. I see people that don't pay enough attention to their franchises. I mean, there's certainly, I ask people all the time, are you going to be average? Are you going to be an average franchisee in life? Are you always average? If you're always average, when you build your pro forma for your franchise, expect that you'll be average. But I was a top 1% franchisee. That's just what I was. I was always that high achiever. So it's all about beefing up your cash flow. If you follow the system for any great franchise and you get glimpses of that system, you're not going to get the proprietary manual, so to speak, in the discovery process with the franchise, but there's enough information, especially working with someone like myself, there's enough information that I'll guide people the right way to select the right brand for them. And then it's about you executing the model. And then when you perfect or get close to perfection of the model, you know, then all of a sudden you get creative and the collaboration really kicks in, like McDonald's. McDonald's, the Big Mac and the, let's see, filet of fish were created by franchisees. They came up with those ideas. They pushed them uphill to the franchisor. They did the R&D and they decided this is worthy. And it, you know, so that collaboration, a lot of people forget about in the franchise world. There are other people up at night trying to figure out how the heck to make this business even better. If you want to start your own business, go for it. I talk to people all the time that are like, I just want to start my own business. I want to buy an existing business. Great. Not exactly a lot of great businesses that I want to buy in my geography. You want to open yourself up to the U.S. That's what some of my friends do, is they'll look throughout the entire country because they have a team that could manage things anywhere. But that's a whole other strategy.
Yeah, it's awesome. So to zoom back out to your world, like, what does life look like for you now, right? You have your franchise broker business. Then I assume you also probably own some other businesses and franchises as well, right? It sounds like you.
No, I sprinkle some money around to family members that want to get started in things. But my wife won't let me have anything else. She loves me focused on her and my franchise brokerage, my podcast, my guesting on podcasts. I have my lead generation, it seems, down at this point because I have people calling me. So in the old days when I started this, most franchise consultants, brokers are buying all kinds of crazy leads. 1 in 100 people even, you know, do a deal. Most people don't want to talk to you because they don't even know you. They think you're essentially cold calling and harassing them.
Right.
I'm long done with that. And I call myself retired. I don't need to work anymore. I do this because I have a lot of fun. I love helping people and I make some money. I get paid commissions by my brands when I place people with a brand. And again, nobody, you know, the person I'm placing, my client, is not directly paying for that.
Sure. I was going to ask what that next piece was. Oh, go ahead, Tony.
So I had read in your bio that you had started a donut chain in Vegas. Tell us a little bit more about that.
I'm apparently the biggest donut entrepreneur in the United States.
Wow.
So I've been called the donut expert by a lot of people. After Krispy Kreme, I really fell in love with the bakery business or industry. And I had somebody that was part of an Italian specialty foods company. His family was, and he had some money and he called me and he said, "Hey, can you create a gourmet donut shop for us in a certain area of Las Vegas," which really was the suburbs where we lived. And I said, "Well, yeah." My license plate, by the way, is creator. I've created other concepts for people, myself, what have you, besides franchises. And so Pink Box was born. Pink Box opened at the end of 2011. And I built a couple of big shops. I did it part-time. I was doing consulting, sort of in an international leadership role, helping a friend of mine's, company. It was fun. And so I did Pink Box part-time. I put a team together and it was amazing. It was amazing. It was, let's just say 591,000 to be exact, were first year sales out of 880 square feet. We made the donuts there retail, right? Second year, 1.1, 1.2 million in the second year, just out of that little tiny shop in the suburbs of Las Vegas. And really launched a major brand after that. And I got out and my partners sold to a wealthy group that's expanding it like crazy. And you know, the original logo's intact that I created with a graphic design friend of mine. I'm happy to see that virtually everything stayed the same. I think the recipes changed a little bit, but I think they got a little bit cheap, but we had some great ingredients and, you know, but it was a great run. So, then I've helped other people launch, you know, Donut Mania, a friend of mine, a friend of a friend that's on the board of Jamba, used to be Jamba Juice, but Jamba, he gave me a guy that was on, the Food Network. He has a big Food Network contract. He's won all kinds of baking competitions internationally. And he wanted to start a donut shop in Vegas, and that's called Wicked Donuts. He did, and it's been very successful. So I helped him with that. You know, my friend on the board of Jamba said, if you're doing donuts, I know you're a bakery expert. You're not a donut expert. You need to call Lance and get him to consult on this project, which I did. And it was a lot of fun.
That's incredible.
We might set them up for franchising, by the way.
Yeah. And that, what I'm really starting to read between the lines, and I hope everyone's starting to understand this, is like, yes, you're extremely business savvy. You're a creator, but the networking that you do and the network that you've built out is really what helps achieve the long-term success, because now you've built out this network of tons of brands where that's leverage over time as well. Tell us a little bit more about that, how you've consciously built that out so that it makes your life a lot easier.
Well, your network is your net worth, and I am a natural connector. And it's what I've always done. I love people. I love great people. I don't waste my time. I'm going to be 57 this year. I no longer waste time with bad people. I give all kinds of free consultations to all kinds of people. I'm talking to people on a regular basis that I'm going to guess I have $0 in my future by having a conversation with this individual. But if they're a nice person, a lot of people are referred to me. I'll give them a shot and I'll tell them, stay in touch. If you need any more free advice, let me know. Because sometimes people just need a nudge. There's an old expression when you're looking to do anything these days, resource up. And whether that's a YouTube person that you don't even know personally that you think you can trust, and better to get a live person, join a Facebook group, stuff like that, where you can get some one-on-one. But I absolutely see the value of it, and I love to give back to people. And the joke is, I had somebody ask me the other day, are you ever going to retire? I said, no. Why would I retire? I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I'm just going to take more vacations. And I've mandated that for my wife. I really didn't take a lot of vacations, maybe one a year in the old days. But now I'm taking more vacations.
That's good. I was going to ask you what the vision is. So maybe just expand that more. Like, what do the next 5, 10 plus years look like for Lance?
The vision for me is it's really fun. I might bring some more people into my organization and really build something, you know, like a law firm, you know, just bring more and more people under me, or a real estate brokerage, and tutor them or mentor them to get to my level and leverage the leverage the podcast. The podcast has done really well. And I have some new ideas. I wrote a book called Luminary Leadership that hit the USA Today bestseller list. I have my first IMDb credit with my friend Dan. We did a documentary called Manifest Nation. Dan is an amazing mindset coach and what have you, and helps people with all kinds of startup stuff. But you know, the kicker is this: most people get stuck. And they get really stuck because most people have all their friends and family chirping in their ears on what they cannot do. And you get stuck for a long period of time because you're told constantly that you don't have the money, you don't have the experience, you don't have the know-how. And let me tell you something, I have people with a $20,000 net worth that get into a franchise, and I have a family right now worth over $700 million that are buying franchises left and right. They're tired of creating their own businesses and they want something easier, more predictable. So franchising is truly for everyone. And for a lot of people, it's a springboard to something else. So franchises could give you the confidence to be able to then pursue what you really want to do. It's the old Superman thing. You come out of the, you know, you guys might be too young for that, but you know, you come out of the phone booth in the old days with the S on your chest. Now I'm ready to conquer the world. But first things first, establish yourself with a franchise.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's the big thing where like we hear this stigma of like, oh, follow your passion. Great. If you're very passionate about what you do, I think it's huge. But get the cash flow down first so that you can follow your passion. That's
bingo.
I don't enjoy. I'm sure like a lot of the franchisees don't like love the McDonald's burgers, but they love the cash flow that comes from it so that they can deploy those dollars into passionate things.
You hit on something so valuable, because I believe in the old days, it was all about passion, because it's all anybody talked about. That's all anybody knew. The reality is, what are you passionate about? Well, what everybody's passionate about is freedom, time freedom, money freedom. And if it's a porta potty business, it might be a shitty business, pun intended, but it's a way for you to make money and not do the things you really don't want to do. The question is, we all have skills. Your skills are transferable. Transferable to what? I have a great, great assessment on my website, and it helps me identify, based on your skill set, life experiences, risk tolerance, I should say, comfort zone, 15-minute survey. It's free, and it helps me really understand. I have a lady with an amazing financial background, heard me on a podcast. She just took the assessment a second time because she's about to make her decision, and she's very focused on this process and absolutely loving it. Sends me an email yesterday. You probably got alerted. I just took the assessment a second time, and it came out a little different. I said, holy cow, girl, you're off the charts now. I mean, you were ready before, but you are really ready now. I could tell how comfortable you are. And it's not a perfect science, but it's really an introspective look on you and your future in entrepreneurship. And she's ready to build an empire.
And we'll include that in the bio, guys. So head to Lance's website for that. Connect with him on Instagram. Just right before we wrap up, this is the Consistency Wins podcast, as you alluded to earlier. What does that word mean to you, consistency?
Consistency is everything. And I mentioned a little bit earlier with McDonald's. Anybody listening, when you think of McDonald's as a perfect example, you said it yourself. I didn't say it. McDonald's doesn't have the best burgers in the world, but it is consistent. And when people see a franchise, they expect consistency. My favorite story today is we can't find a darn pool company in Las Vegas where we are because they're all inconsistent. They all show up at different times. They never tell us what the results were of the inspection of the pool each week. Franchising is all about consistency and customer service. So, but consistency is everything in franchise.
Lance, this has been an awesome interview. I know our listeners are going to extract a ton of value. We're going to be sharing this around a ton. There's a lot of people top of mind I know that actually own franchises that want to expand and keep growing their impact. So maybe some even direct connections coming your way pretty soon. Appreciate the time and really looking forward to pumping this out to our community.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate you, Lance.